Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Magitek by B.R. Kingsolver. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. Chapter 1. I was 13, almost 14, when my world crashed. Two retainers from Finlay, my grandmother's family, abruptly barged into my classroom.
"Pardon us?"
The one I recognized as Osiris Dillon said to my teacher,
"Mistress James must come with us now."
The teacher, fear evident on her face, turned to me. "It's okay," I said, although inwardly I was shaking. Somehow I knew that it wasn't okay, that it would never be okay again. I gathered my books and put them in my bag, then slowly stood, thankful that my legs held me. Conscious of everyone staring at me, I walked to the front of the room. Osiris and his companion dipped their heads when I reached them, then Osiris turned and walked out of the room. I followed him, and the other man fell in behind me. The headmistress stood there waiting for us, her expression very serious, but she didn't say anything. She walked beside me down the long hall, not to the front entrance but to the back, where the service trucks delivered food to the cafeteria. Outside, at the loading dock, a car waited, a long black limousine, along with two armored fighting vehicles. All of the men wore the uniforms of Finlay Guardians, and they were on high alert, their personal weapons at the ready. One man opened the back door of the limo when we appeared, and I was herded into the car. Osiris got in the front with the driver. No one said anything to me, and I was too afraid to ask any questions. But my father had trained me, and I wrapped my hand around a small box in my bag. He had created it, and with my magical gifts being the same as his, I had the power to activate and use it. Our small caravan drove north from the school in Baltimore out into the country to the Finlay Estate. The grand white house perched on top of a hill, surrounded by tall white walls and forest. When we arrived, the front gates were closed, and the guard towers on the walls were fully manned. Osiris hustled me out of the limo and through the personnel gate, leaving the car outside. I glanced back and saw the guards at the gates searching the inside and underneath our vehicle, which frightened me more than anything. We passed through scanners, both mechanical and magical, into a room inside the wall, and then I was placed in a new vehicle and driven up to the main house. The butler met us at the front door, but Osiris stayed with me as we entered the house and were conducted to a room I had visited only twice before, my granduncle's study. Granduncle George Finlay and Grandmother Olivia awaited me. Osiris stayed outside in the hall, pulling the door closed behind me. I stood there, staring at the two oldest members of my father's family.
"Come, sit, child," my grandmother said, indicating the place next to her on a love seat.
Granduncle George was in his chair behind his large desk. I sat down, holding my bag in my lap. I wasn't sure what to do with it. Grandmother Olivia reached over and pulled it out of my grasp, then set it on the floor beside her.
"What is that in your hand?"
Granduncle asked. I opened my hand and showed them the box.
"Did your father give you that?"
Grandmother asked. "Yes, ma'am."
"What is it?"
"A lightning generator."
"I think you can put it away for now,"
Grandmother said, sticking out her hand.
"You're safe here."
I placed it on her palm, and she slipped it into my open bag. "But I'm not safe outside," I said.
"No, Danica, you're not."
Her eyes filmed, and her chin quivered a little, as though she was trying not to cry.
"There's no easy way to say this, so I'll not try to sugarcoat it. Your father is gone. Something happened this afternoon.
Mom?
Your mother is safe,
Granduncle said.
Once the situation stabilizes, we'll bring her here, but we don't think it's safe for her to travel right now.
How? My father was healthy when I had seen him the day before.
We're not sure,
Granduncle said.
He and Richard were attacked in the city center.
Richard Findlay was George and Olivia's younger brother. I found out later that while Granduncle Richard's body was found, my father's never was. But that wasn't what worried me at that moment. I had no idea where my father's death left me and my mother. I was a bastard, something the kids at school were fond of telling me. My surname was James, granddaughter of Hunter James, the most reviled man on the planet. Were we no longer part of the family? Chapter 2. 22 years later. The man sitting in my boss's office was a mage, or at least he was dressed like a mage, which was a pretty good indicator. I didn't recognize him. Not that mages wore uniforms, but they all tended to flashy, expensive outfits. I didn't know if their arrogance and flamboyance was a side effect of their magic, or if they picked it up along the way from their families and schooling, but I had never met a mage who was shy and retiring. Witches tended toward the hippie earth mama organic farmer look. Vampires dressed in black or silver or red gothic disco fashions, and werewolves seemed to favor either mountain man or Native American shaman outfits. Demons wore whatever, or nothing at all. The Fae dressed like the Fae. The type of magic I had was fairly rare, but almost all of those I knew with it wore black leather and rode motorcycles, except for Mary Sue. To say she was different was a world-class understatement. My boss, Thomas Whitaker, was a mage, and I was pretty sure that his dark tailored suit trimmed in gold piping cost more than I made in a month. But he was 100 years older than I was, so I had time to catch up. Not that I planned to be sitting in an office when I was 130. The fantasies I indulged in when thinking of my future trended toward white sand beaches and piña coladas, with surfer-muscled cabana boys lighting my dope pipe and giving me massages.
"Ah, Danica,"
Whitaker said, waving me into the room.
"This is Michael Novak. Michael, this is Danica James, the Magitech I was telling you about."
Novak gave me the up and down about 3 times, and he didn't look happy. I probably didn't either. The Novaks? Me being called into a meeting with a scion of one of the 10 families didn't bode well for me having a happy time.
"Michael is joining us from the drug division,"
Whitaker said, drawing my attention from the pompous ass sitting in front of his desk. The way it was stated raised immediate, fiery red flags. "No.
No, no, no. Please, no." "Danica is one of our finest detectives,"
Whitaker said. The red flags launched fireworks.
"She also came over from narcotics, so you have a common background. I'm sure the two of you will work well together."
My new partner. I stared at Whitaker, and he stared back. After my last case, he had said I would pay for breaking protocol, not to mention a few regulations and a couple of laws. But I had solved it when half the force had been stymied. That bought me a reprieve and the lack of a reprimand in my file. It also bought me a new partner, and Whitaker's look dared me to object. Considering Novak's family connections, I assumed he must have screwed up somewhere if Whitaker was assigning him to me. If he was a wunderkind, he would have landed with another mage, one who was older and more established, one who was considered a good influence. Most cops looked at an assignment to be my partner as a form of punishment, if not a death sentence. The 2 deaths weren't my fault, though. Idiots do stupid things. The Novak family was 1 of the 10, usually considered the richest and most powerful. I wasn't fixated on following the antics, scandals, and maneuverings of the families, but it didn't take a genius to figure out that Whitaker was allied with Novak. I could sense the deference in Whitaker's attitude, even though the Whitaker clan was one of the hundred, and Thomas was Michael's boss. Class structures were ingrained from an early age. At least my new partner was easy to look at. Michael appeared to be mid-30s, about my height, with dark hair, perfectly symmetrical features with chiseled cheekbones, and an athletic body that promised he might be in decent physical shape. It could have been worse. Whitaker could have saddled me with an out-of-shape drunk like the guy he assigned me to when I was new. "I drive," I said to Novak. Before Novak had a chance to reply, Whitaker said, "A beat cop called in a homicide in downtown Baltimore. Tompkins was tagged, but he just called and asked for arcane division assistance. He'll probably turn it over to you." I nodded, then said to Novak, "Let's go." My new partner followed me out of Whitaker's office and down the stairs to the parking garage. He raised an eyebrow when I led him to the sporty-looking black Toyota the department assigned me. I assumed he was probably used to top-dollar luxury land barges, but the toy was fast, nimble, and cornered like a bat. Not as good as my cycle for chasing down vampires, but in my opinion, it was the best the Metropolitan Police Department had to offer. My modifications made it even better. We buckled up and blasted out onto the street. Novak stiffened, and I tried not to grin. I flipped on the lights and hit the freeway, swerving in and out of traffic and sitting on the horn. No sense breaking my partner in gently. If stuff got rough, he needed to be ready to deal with it. Chapter 3. It wasn't a bad area of the city, although it used to be better before the pandemics and subsequent wars. And it had seen an increase in drug trafficking in recent years, probably because a lot of college students and single young professionals lived in the area. It was also fairly near the location where the rift had opened a few years before. That always messed up a neighborhood. I parked and flashed my badge at a uniformed cop, hoping he would keep my car from being broken into. As soon as I walked into the alley, I knew why Tompkins asked for arcane. Blood was splashed everywhere, and the corpse barely resembled anything human. I assumed it was a man due to the short hair, had been shredded.
"It's bad," Tompkins said as he came to meet me. "The girl is over there on the other side of the dumpster."
George Tompkins, with his craggy face, hair graying at the temples, and a long overcoat covering a cheap brown suit, looked like a cop, and he was a good one. He'd been working homicide for more than 10 years. "Well, obviously not a vampire," I said. "George, this is Michael Novak, my new partner." Tompkins led me farther into the alley and stopped, pointing at a footprint in the blood. The print wasn't close to human. I judged it at about size 33, with 6 clawed toes, and it looked as though the thing that left it was hairy. The girl had long blonde hair, and other than having been disemboweled and having her face bitten off, she hadn't suffered as much damage as the man. "Any idea why they were here in the alley?" I asked. With a gesture to his right, Tompkins said,
"We found drug works."
I took a few steps in that direction and saw a syringe, a spoon, a lighter, and a small baggie with white powder lying on the ground next to the dumpster. "I wonder if whatever ate them got high on the dope," I said.
"Doesn't look like they had a chance to shoot up," Tompkins said. "I think whatever did this was back here waiting for them."
"Ever seen something like this?" I asked.
"Dunno. Demon? Werewolf? Some kind of monster, but no, nothing quite like this. Doesn't look like it was hungry."
At that point, I noticed that Novak was looking a little green. "Out. Go on, get out." I pointed to the street where we'd parked and gave him a shove. "If you puke and contaminate the scene, I'll kick your ass." He went, stumbling a little.
"New to major crimes?" Tompkins asked.
"Yeah, came over from narcotics."
"Novak," One of the Novaks?
Yeah. He shook his head.
No good deed goes unpunished. You know the brass has it in for you.
Luckily, the cops on the street respected me because they knew I took care of business. I wandered around, checking the walls of the buildings, and especially the dead end. One way into the alley, one way out. I finally found bloodstains that indicated where the killer climbed out. Holes in the brick wall that looked like claw marks, and the distance between the holes weren't encouraging. The being had to be at least 6 to 8 feet long or tall, with claws on all four extremities. And it climbed a sheer brick wall, so not a werewolf. But demon didn't make sense either. The damage to the victims didn't match what I was used to seeing from the run-of-the-mill common demon, and it hadn't fed. The rest of the alley didn't reveal anything interesting, so I talked to Tompkins until Novak came back. He still looked pale and shaky, but more like a man who had just puked than a man getting ready to. "What's your affinity?" I asked him.
"Aromancy."
"Really? Maybe Whitaker did me a solid after all. Come." I led him over to the wall where I suspected our monster had absconded. "I think that's where our murderer escaped," I said, pointing upward. "Let's go." He looked at me like I had lost my mind. "What?" I couldn't figure out why he was hesitating. "Come on, let's go."
"You want to follow that thing?"
I took a deep breath. "That's what we do. Now, either you take me up to the top of that building, or we call D.C. Whitaker and have him send me another partner. Your choice, Mr. Novak." He looked like he didn't know whether to cry or get angry. Then he grabbed me by the upper arms, and we rose into the air. The problem was my back was to the wall, and I wanted to face it so I could inspect it for further evidence. My new partner was going to be a chore to break in. We passed the roof and stopped, hanging there like a couple of stationary targets. Cops, even if not in uniform, weren't the most popular people in most parts of town. "Can you see anything?" I asked in my sweetest voice. I knew the answer as we were face to face, staring at each other.
No.
"Then perhaps you could set us down on the roof before someone decides to use us as target practice."
"Huh?"
"Put me down on the roof. Gently." We started to drop. "Not there. Over to the left." He had started to land right on top of the killer's trail. Didn't the boy understand anything about preserving evidence? As soon as my feet hit the roof, I shook out of his grasp. "We need to have a long talk about proper procedure," I muttered, trying to look at the deep scars in the bricks on the edge of the roof where our prey had pulled himself over the top. We followed its trail, the amount of blood diminishing by the step, across the roof and onto that of the next building. It sort of tipped me off that none of the blood belonged to my quarry. I reached the edge and looked over, down 5 stories to the busy street below. No way it had gone that way unless it had wings. After a quick look around, I took off to my left, crossing several more roofs until I looked down on another alley 3 stories below. Our monster was purple. It also had more muscles than a professional wrestler. "Okay," I said. "Hold me from behind this time. You can do an air shield, right?"
"Yes.
I think it would be a good idea to have one in front of us before we touch down." He wrapped his arms around my waist and stepped off the roof, holding me to his chest. A small part of my mind noticed that it was a very nice chest and that his arms were well developed. Too bad he hadn't spent as much time exercising his mind. The creature didn't notice us at first, but we drew its attention when we were about 10 feet from the ground. It scrambled out of the dumpster it had been rummaging through and stood facing us when we landed. As soon as Michael loosened his grip on me, I drew my pistol. "Hold it right there. Metropolitan Police, lie down on your face with your hands above your head." Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the shocked expression on Novak's face. I think he expected me to blast the creature on sight, but one must observe the niceties. "It might be someone's pet, or someone's brother. Besides, a cop never knew when a media drone might be recording from overhead.
What for?
The creature's mouth wasn't really shaped for human speech, but its English was understandable. Its head was shaped a bit like a horse's, and its mouth was filled with alligator teeth. At least 7 feet tall, bipedal, and covered with long, silky fur, it had 6 fingers on its hands and 6 toes on its ape-like feet. From that close, and since it wore no clothes, it was obviously male. And purple. Did I mention purple? I'm arresting you on suspicion of murdering 2 humans this morning.
They interrupted my meal.
As if that was reason enough for murder.
I was just protecting my food.
I prayed he hadn't been eating another victim. Having to go through his belly to identify a person wasn't my idea of a good time. What food?
The restaurant there puts out a box lunch for me every day. Tasty stuff.
I envisioned the alley again and almost heaved. His idea of gourmet dining was the rotting food a pizza joint tossed into the dumpster. That's not an excuse for murder. Now lie down and give yourself up. He snarled and started toward me. I pulled the trigger, and the magically enhanced explosive incendiary round blew a hole in his chest the size of my fist. It rocked him, but didn't stop him. I heard Novak's gun go off 3 times before I pulled the trigger again. My second round blew a large hole in the beast's abdomen, and he stopped. He stood there swaying, then snarled again, and his knees bent as he prepared to leap at me. My third bullet caught him between the eyes, and he fell in a heap. "Call for forensics and have dispatch tell Tompkins that we got his murderer," I said, holstering my sidearm and walking over to the monster crumpled on the ground. When I got closer, I found that it stunk like garbage, proving once again that we are what we eat. I leaned closer. Novak was a pretty good shot. I could see where all 3 of his bullets had hit the creature in the chest. Not that they had hurt it any. Novak hung up his phone, but didn't seem to be inclined to inspect our kill any closer. I walked back to him. "Let me see your gun." He handed it over. "Is this department issue?" I asked. It was a standard, unmodified 9mm automatic with a 12-cartridge magazine.
"Yes, it's what I carried with narcotics."
That didn't make any sense to me at all. "I thought you were with Narco in the Arcane Division."
"That's right."
I was stunned. "What kind of cases did you work?"
"Drug trafficking, you know, people selling magically enhanced drugs in schools and colleges. I helped break up that ring out in Howard County."
Understanding dawned. He had worked upper-class cases. Humans dealing drugs to humans. Mages and witches enhancing drugs and peddling them to rich people's kids. Soccer moms sharing magical highs at the country club. That was a long way from the streets where I worked narcotics and very different drugs. Not to mention very different drug dealers and mules. "When we get back to the office, we're going to trade this pop gun in for something with some stopping power," I said. "Carrying this will just get you killed." Chapter 4. Back at the station, I filled out my report and got ready to go home. I stopped to chat with someone in the hall, and as a result, I didn't manage to make it out of the building before Whitaker caught up to me.
"Danica, Whitaker wants you in his office,"
the desk sergeant said as I was making my escape. "I just talked to him," I said, and got a raised eyebrow in return.
"Unless you've added translocation to your repertoire, I've spoken to him since you did last," the sergeant said.
So I trudged back up the stairs and down the hall to Whitaker's office. His door was partially open, so I knocked and stuck my head in.
"Sergeant James, come in."
Whitaker wasn't alone. Another mage sat in the chair I had vacated a few minutes before, a large man and a little overweight, gray at the temples, wearing an expensive suit.
"I'm Justice Benning," he said.
He didn't offer his hand. Mages usually didn't.
"Close the door, Danny,"
Whitaker said, motioning for me to take the other chair in front of his desk.
Mr. Benning's daughter is missing, but he hasn't been able to get missing persons to take him seriously. I'd like you to look into it. Quietly. Don't ruffle any feathers in the basement.
The missing persons bureau consisted of half a dozen prickly cops stuck in the basement of police headquarters, pretending to work and care about their work. The Benning family was one of the 100. Serious money and power. How old is she? I asked as I sat down.
17. She didn't come home from a school function 2 nights ago. The policeman I spoke to spent about 15 minutes investigating and said she probably ran off with a boy. Miss James, she doesn't have a boyfriend.
That her father knew about.
I tried going up the chain of command here at the Met, but no one's taking it seriously,
he continued.
So I came to see Thomas.
And most cops probably wouldn't take it seriously unless her body turned up. I knew that at least a couple dozen teenagers were reported missing every day. More than a few hundred of them had probably crossed the rift and would never be seen again. The Whitaker family was also one of the 100, and the two men were about the same age. It didn't take a genius or a detective to figure out how I ended up with the case. You'll authorize my overtime? My boss nodded. Okay, I'll look into it. But, Mr. Benning, if I don't come up with anything by the end of the month, I'm not going to beat my head against the wall. There is a chance that she doesn't want to be found or that she can't be found. I waited while that sank in. He stared straight ahead for 2 or 3 minutes, then turned his head and studied my face. Mr. Benning, if she's crossed the rift, whether of her own volition or not, we'll never see her again. It happens. If she's been eaten by something, the police will never find a body. If the car was abandoned, its parts are probably in Detroit or Dallas by now. But if she's alive and in this reality, then there will be a trail, and I'm very good at following a trail. Officially, no human had ever crossed the rift and come back. Neither had anyone ever crossed the rift and communicated back across it to those on Earth.
Sergeant James is very persistent, Whitaker said. But if she comes back and tells me she can't find any leads, I'll have no choice but to pull her off this. James? Magitek?
I let a bit of a smile play around my lips. Hunter James was my grandfather. I had never tried to deny my heritage. My grandfather was responsible for breaking the world, and it made me a pariah in some circles, but it tended to make people leery of screwing with me. Sometimes, in weak moments, I wished that I could move someplace where no one knew me and change my name.
I'm prepared to pay a very handsome reward,
Benning said. Then he handed me a data chip and a printed picture. His daughter was a stunner.
Everything I could think of about Sarah is on that chip, he said. Pictures, school record, list of her friends. I've tried tracking her down, but no one seems to know anything.
Or they aren't willing to talk to her father, I said.
Probably. I'm not so old that I can't remember my own attitude toward adults when I was that age.
That made him a welcome rarity in my experience. We talked for another 15 minutes, then I got up to leave. I may have questions after I go through this. I assume there's contact information for you and your wife. He nodded. I'll update Deputy Commissioner Whitaker, and he'll let you know if I find anything. You're home late. Rough day? Did you eat? I smiled at my roommate. Kirsten was a hearth witch who owned an apothecary shop and worked a normal 9-to-5 Tuesday through Saturday. We had been best friends since high school. Busy day, and I grabbed something at Jenny's. Whitaker slipped me a special with guaranteed overtime. I sat down at my computer and plugged in Benning's chip. Kirsten came and peered over my shoulder. What's the case? Missing high school girl. Family is one of the 100. At least it's not tracking down a demon. Unless a demon kidnapped her, you never know. The girl could be so beautiful that she charmed the savage beast. Kirsten laughed. Want a beer? Yeah, thanks. She went off to the kitchen while the data on Sarah Benning loaded. Kirsten came back with two beers and handed me one as I pulled up.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?